On this edition of the Golf Digest Fantasy Podcast, we talk Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, and the WGC Match Play. Welcome back to the Golf Digest Fantasy Podcast. I'm Joel Beal. Joining me is Stephen Hennessy and Chris Powers. This week is the WGC Match Play in Austin. I believe the third year the event is in Texas. But before we do that, let's do a little recap of the Arnold Palmer Invitational run by one Rory McIlroy, who birdied five of his final six holes to kind of get off the snide his first victory since the 2016 Tour Championship, which coincided with the day of Arnold Palmer's passing. So talk about coming full circle on that with Rory. Steve, what was your takeaway from the weekend?
Well, Tiger, again, was in contention, another top five in his last start before the Masters, so has us all excited and had us all excited on Sunday. Had a shot again, and I was impressed by his game. I mean, just had that little duck hook into OB on 16, and that kind of killed his chances. But before that, the game looked pretty on. Iron play was great, rolling a few putts, short game was good again, so I mean, he's got us all pumped for Augusta.
Yeah, I mean, with Tiger, every part of his game is firing except the driver. That's the one area. I think he's 148th right now in strokes gained off the tee, and that's just something that it's hard to overlook. But, you know, Chris, from what you saw not only at Bay Hill but, you know, at the Valspar and even at the PGA National, does he really have a viable chance to compete at Augusta National, or do you think really these driving lows, you know, even though there have only been five tournaments he's played in, do you think there's not really much of a sample to kind of go off of right now?
I mean, I think the putting has been good enough to compete at Augusta. And we saw that Sunday for sure when he made that charge, which was nice to see because Valspar, he never really had anything going on Sunday with the putter. And obviously, you know, he can crush that three wood now. So if he can,
he was at 320 yards.
I know he said 16 would have been 3-wood, 8-iron if he just hit. I mean, that hole is so short.
It's a par four. Basically.
It's great. I mean, what did Rory have? Rory had a sand wedge.
Yeah, 110 yards, 373.
Yeah, come on, guys.
But the driver is definitely a problem, especially with if Rory's firing on all cylinders at Dustin, the way they hit the ball at Augusta.
Justin Thomas.
So I that's definitely something to worry about, but it always has been in the last few times we've seen him at Augusta. So yeah, you know, he can get grind around somehow.
Yeah, even in his heyday, he was never really known as one who'd be piping it right down the middle every time. Right. But I felt like it was only one or two that would kind of go out of the ballpark rather than half the time pulls the drive around and you have no idea where it's going.
And at Augusta, he probably does need to hit like at least five drives around. That's the thing.
I think maybe more than that. He probably closer to 8 or 9 at this point.
Yeah. So. 1, 2, you know, probably 15, 13. There's a handful.
11, 10 probably as well.
Yeah, 11, tee shot. You know, that's going to be scary when you got the two-way miss going. Forget about it.
I was telling Stevie, I was watching the 2013 Masters yesterday. He hit one right on 11. He was like, get way right. Vintage.
One of the scariest tee shots in the game.
Which, in case you missed it, Augusta National put the last 50 Masters telecasts online this week, which
I dabbled yesterday.
Must be designed to break up every relationship known to man. I think I've spent at least 4.5 hours the past two nights going. It's so easy because, at least for me, I'd go 20 minutes down one rabbit hole and be like, oh, yeah, this was the year Freddie Couples. I shouldn't say that year because Freddie Couples is always there. But it's like, oh, Anthony Kim. I forgot about 2010. Right. He was right there. And then
Ernie
go back. And it's so addictive. I've never understood when people are like, I can't get off of X, you know, I can't quit X. It's like, come on, just go ahead and I totally understand addiction now. It makes sense after going down this rabbit hole.
Fueling all of our addictions for the Masters. And I mean, I watched the match play bracket show for an hour last night, so it's going to be hard to convince my girlfriend, hey, can we watch, you know, 09 Masters tonight? Probably not, but when she's not around, then I'm probably going to watch old Masters.
Between this and March Madness going on, I think we're all going to be single by the end of the month.
Oh, well.
But before turning to our attention to match play, touching back on Rory, this is a guy who he started out the year actually very strong, came out, I think, T3 in Dubai, then a runner-up at Abu Dhabi, or maybe flip-flop that, crisscross that, but came over to America and really struggled four events, missed a few cuts. The putting was all over the place, and then really turned it around at Bay Hill. Chris, I'll just start with you. I think we tend to jump on, you know, the wind ultimately makes your back. Is this a, you know, is this a 1 week thing? Is this an aberration, or is this something where if you look at his career, Rory's actually been a player of runs. All of his wins kind of come in bunches. Do you think that's the latter, or do you really think this Bay Hill thing, or are there still concerns for you, I guess, going into Augusta with Rory's play?
I think you're right about the bunches thing. So I think another few wins are coming, and maybe even at Augusta. And I think the main thing he said Sunday that I took away was that he was close and everything kind of clicked this week. And I think that's the case for a lot of these guys. I've heard Dustin say that. I've heard Thomas say that. Mm-hmm. Just if one thing clicks and they're already close, it's scary, especially with Rory, who's, you know, at his best, still might be better than anyone.
Yeah, he pointed to Brad Faxon and some putting tips he got from, you know, one of the best putters of the last 20 or so years. And he said when he came over, he played Pebble for the first time, and he had never played there in the AT&T, obviously, the U.S. Open. But Poana wasn't his thing. And mm-hmm. then he went to Riviera, which is also Poana, and couldn't really figure it out. So it's almost like you said, Chris, all this came together. You got to little tip from Faxon, and you know, that's always been the bugaboo with him is the putting. Mm-hmm. But he put a new putter in the bag this week, and 24 putts I think he had on Sunday, so it's impressive.
I mean, basically gained 10 strokes in the field on that, in that last yeah. round the way he was putting.
Putting,
and, you know, it's exactly that's the one thing with Rory. It's if his putting was just adequate, he would be running away with tournaments. Now, if he's actually if he's a top 10 putter all of a sudden, I mean. Game over, it seems like, for the rest of the field.
Yeah, it's easy for us to say that, but we forget how good Justin Thomas seemed after he won the Honda and how good, you know, Dustin was. You know,
John Rahm hasn't played in a couple weeks,
totally.
So we just forget about him because right. he hasn't teed up in the last term or
but
two.
I think that's the exciting part is all these guys' games have clicked early on before the Masters this year, which makes it that much more exciting, plus the Tiger Woods element. So it's one of the most exciting Masters build-ups in the last couple of years.
Building right up to a Francisco Molinari.
Charlie Hoffman.
Which I feel bad because those are actually both really two good players. But
yeah, Hoffman's played great.
I would love to
Augusta.
See Hoffman win. Absolutely. I'm a Hoffman guy.
Me
but
too.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost getting too big at this point. I worry if the hype is actually going to lift
too
up
good.
To the bill. Yeah, but this week, you know, Masters is in 2 weeks. Before then, we have the WGC match play. As we mentioned, it is in Austin. Did the drawings on Monday night, 16 groups. For those that don't remember, they switched the format up a couple years ago. Instead of just a single elimination, there are now 16 pods with four players each. It's a round robin, basically against three other competitors from Monday through Friday. Then after that, you get to the traditional match play format of one and done. So 16 groups, we can just talk about a few of them. Dustin Johnson, defending champion, he's playing with Kevin Kisner. Adam Haslin, Bernard Weisberger, Justin Thomas is going against Francisco Molinari, Patton Kizzire, and Luke List. Probably the most penultimate or the biggest group is Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed going mano a mano. That should be really interesting. Hideki Matsuyama, Patrick Cantlay, Cameron Smith are in the group. Then to me, the group of death, group six: Rory McIlroy, Brian Harman, Johnny Vegas, and Peter Uihlein. Now, guys, I know
tough draw for Rory.
Trust it off everybody in that group, but there are 16 groups. So, Steve, we'll start with you. What's one group that kind of catches your eye?
Well, first of all, I think it's ridiculous. I think we could all agree that Victor Dubuisson deserves a lifetime exemption into this tournament.
Legend.
For what he did in 2014, a Jason Day.
Yep.
But in terms of this year's field, I think actually Justin Thomas has a tough draw with Luke List. There's mm-hmm. a little revenge factor there from the playoff they had just a few weeks back, and Luke List has played great the past couple weeks, so you know, Justin Thomas looks like a favorite, you know, to advance. If you're filling out a bracket, you probably have him going a far way, but don't discount Luke List to do some damage. And another pot I think is really tough is the Tommy Fleetwood, Daniel Berger, Kevin Chappell, Ian Poulter group. I mean, all four of those guys, you wouldn't be surprised if any of them mm-hmm. advance. Kevin Chappell has President's Cup experience. Him versus Daniel Berger. This first matchup on Wednesday is going to be tough. And Tommy Fleetwood's, you know, one of the best players in the world right now. And Ian Poulter has shown he's one of the best match play players of his generation. So, you know, that's a tough match.
It's Chris, how about you? What pops out at from the first grouping?
I mean, I love this Pat Perez, Gary Woodland, Webb Simpson, Siwoo Kim grouping here. Kim, obviously, had a nice little President's Cup Sunday, finger wagging the American fans. And then Woodland was, he was in the final match a couple years ago in this event. Is that Harding Park,
against Rory. Rory,
yeah. Right. And then you got to love Perez as the, he's the highest seed in that group. So he's, I guess he's the favorite. But and then you got Webb Simpson. That's a really nice group. But I think the best group is that Alex Noren, Tony Finau, Kevin Na, Thomas Peters group.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Noren's had a great year. Finau. I mean, this course seems to be, like, big on driving the ball a long way,
yeah,
Finau.
Yeah, we saw it last year with Rahm and DJ and even Rory in the beginning, but, yeah, you're right.
Finau's first in driving distance. And then Kevin Na, solid. And then Peters kind of had a quiet year. He's always a trendy pick, or he was last year, his first appearance in the Masters. And he's kind of
great at the Ryder Cup, right, Hazeltine.
So he's a sneaky player in that group. But I do like Noren to get out of that one.
Yeah, I mean, coming in ranked 6 in strokes gained, it's gonna be tough to get Noren out. But yeah, I'm with you. It's funny. I think Peters after that 2016 Ryder Cup, we thought there was gonna be this ascension, and then he kind of lived up to the billing at last year's Masters for the first couple rounds, and still finished in the top 5, but hasn't really done much of note since then. He's got a couple of top 5 finishes actually coming into this to get back on track, but he's definitely fallen off the radar a bit. But again, just I think that 2016 Ryder Cup is still in the minds of many, and into that match play mentality, he's definitely a guy you don't want to see. I guess another one that really caught my eye as well is Paul Casey, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Kyle Stanley, and Russell Henley. And you know, you mentioned, Steve, earlier, Poulter has this reputation of being a match play maven, but Casey's been just as good. He's got 2 runner-ups in this event. He also has 2 other top 5 finishes. So this is something that definitely speaks to him. It's just a murderer's row of ball strikers also in that group. Fitzpatrick, even though he's not very long, few are better with his irons. Kyle Stanley, when he gets it going, man, he seems like he'll never miss. He's very flush with his irons. And Russell Henley's just been one of those guys who's consistently in the top 25 every week. So a lot of good matchups day one. And another one we totally missed is Jason Day, Louis Oosthuizen, Duffner, and James Hahn, who, I don't think they're necessarily up to that level of the group of deaths. We've given it a few things, but man, that's no walk in the park for those guys either. So, after looking at the groups, Steve, just go to you. Who's one guy you like to advance out of all this and maybe make a run at the finals?
Well, John Rahm's group, I think he got a pretty good draw. Afi Barnrat, has been playing really well, but doesn't really have he does have the match play win at the Perth event. But, Keegan Bradley hasn't been playing great. Chez Reavy started the year off great, hasn't done much. I like Rahm there. Like you said, Paul Casey, I think he has a lot to prove, too. I think he wants to make this Ryder Cup team this year. So if he goes on a little run and makes a statement that, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with for the Euros. And I like Jason Day, too. He's been playing great. Oosthuizen, we haven't seen peak Oosthuizen form yet this year. Hahn, was in the playoff against Kizire to start the year. Duffner hasn't done much. So I think Day, Rahm, and Casey are kind of locks to advance.
I mean, Day's been as good as anybody in this event. Has 2 wins as well. I think he had a second place as well. Third place finish, excuse me, back in 2013. Yeah, for a guy who we don't necessarily he had a very pedestrian President's Cup record, especially in singles matches, but this event just speaks to him, and yeah, it's hard to go against him. Chris, how about you? What are a couple guys that pop out as potential wins this week for you?
I mean, we'd be remiss not to mention Shubhankar Sharma.
Oh, yeah.
Big Sharma.
That's for Myers. Hopefully he's listening. And then I actually do like Rafa Cabrera-Bello to advance out of that group with Mickelson and Satoshi Kodaira.
He played Spieth last year and actually played him pretty tight.
That's right.
So.
And then Charles Howell III's in there. But I do like Cabrera-Bello. He had a good showing here last year. He's got some Ryder Cup experience. Little. I wouldn't call him a sleeper. He's a 17th-ranked player, but I think he could take down Phil in that group.
Yeah, he comes in hot with a T3 from Mexico. And Phil, this is an event he's never really played well in. 13 appearances, has never made the Final Four. So, yeah, it seems like even though there's some big names in this group, Rafa definitely seems like a pretty good bet to advance. Guy who kind of pops out for me is Ty Hatton, who, I think got a little bit of a bad rap a couple weeks ago after kind of seemed a little bit emotional during that final round with Phil Mickelson and Big Sharm. And then kind of took a shot at Phil the other day in a podcast saying, he thought Phil was getting some favorable rulings. But, you look at his group, he's with Charlie Hoffman, Brendan Steele, and Alexander Levy, who, again, all very underappreciated, very, very solid presences, but at the same time, I think Hatton's at least coming into this event head and shoulders above in terms of performance this year. Really, after that, he would play in that first round of singles play, Hideki Matsuyama, Patrick Cantlay, Cameron Smith. I just look at that, and those are big names, but Cantlay's, even though he's still playing well, is not quite living up to that start we saw from last year as well as the beginning of this season. Matsuyama's still dealing with injury. Cam Smith's been very good. He's had top 20s, I think, 9 of his past 12 starts. So, but I still think Hatton's a guy, and once you get to that Elite Eight, anything can happen. So Hatton's a guy that I'm really, you know, paying attention with. But I think the big thing we got to talk about is Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed.
Oh, yeah.
Coming on Friday.
Friday. Mark your calendars.
Which,
it's going to be awesome.
Let's be honest. Having this dynamic duo from Team America face off is already fantastic in itself. But then we have that Patrick Reed video thrown into the mix of Reed saying, if my name was Jordan Spieth, I would have got this ruling.
Whatever fan that was who recorded that and shared it, and thank goodness for that, because that was amazing.
That was great. You know, and I think it was said in jest, but there's always a little bit of truth to every joke. And certainly Spieth, at least from others, has been accused of getting some favorable rulings in the past. I imagine both of them will downplay it, but it also just adds a little bit more spice to this matchup.
Yeah, I think it does. I think they're both buddies, but you're right. Like, there's a little non-jest there. And if anything, I think it could motivate Spieth to kind of, you know, find his form and get everything back clicking. You know, so it might be a little motivator for him. But at any rate, I mean, Patrick Reed versus Spieth, I mean, they've partnered together on the last three team events, and now they're going against each other. It's going to be awesome.
You gotta hope that it's for a spot in the Sweet 16.
Totally.
For sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If it doesn't really mean anything, then it's...
It'll hurt if it's just a consolation, but it'll be really interesting Friday television if it's for a spot in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, if Charles Schwartz has already locked it up, it really takes the air out of it.
Yeah.
I'm also worried, though, if this goes sideways, if there's like a fight or something, or it gets sour, all of a sudden you break up this team.
Remember Miguel Angel Jimenez and
Keegan Bradley?
All-time match play moment.
Content king. I mean... That's amazing. So maybe we're not really hoping for that, but it wouldn't be the worst thing if something like that went down.
I mean, listen, right now Vegas still has U.S. as heavy favorites in the Ryder Cup. If this goes sideways, you better be close to your guy on the phone to put something in.
Seriously.
But yeah, just going around, final thoughts, Chris, off the top of your head, who you going with as the winner this week?
Winner? Man. I guess I'll go with Norin, my guy Norin.
Wow.
He made the quarters last year, and I think he would have gotten a little bit farther, but he ran into Dustin, who was, you know, on a different level at that point in the year. So I'm going to roll with Norin and get out of the group and make it and win the whole thing.
Steve, how about you?
I think I like Jason Day just because his matchup, that first pod he's in, I like his odds of getting out of that. This format is so tough. I mean, like you're saying with Norin, I mean, that's – Kevin Na could just turn it on, but Norin, you should like his chances to go far. But Jason Day has a decent pairing. Dustin Johnson, I mean, he's awesome in this event. Obviously, won it in last year. But Adam Hadwin has 3 top 15s the last 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, goes on a little run here.
Even Kisner, who's playing pretty bad this year, is still a guy who I would not necessarily want to wake up and play in.
He's so consistent. And
up to the challenge, for
sure. They have that story, Kiz and DJ, of playing junior golf together, and they're 14, and Kisner holed out from, like, 100 yards from the trees and, like, made a miracle hole out to beat DJ. So there's a history there in South Carolina junior golf, so that's something to follow, too. But, yeah, I'm going to go with Jason Day just because I like his pairing. What about you, JB?
I'm going a little off the. Well, I shouldn't go off because he's the number one seed in his group. But Mark Leishman, who just seems is one of the more consistent guys. He's come in with 7 top tens in the past 13 outings. You know, his group, Brandon Grace is he's starting to come back from a little bit of a rough year last year. He's not that top 10 player that we saw that was competing at U.S. Opens and Open Championships a few years ago. But you know, still not quite there with his game. Bubba Watson obviously had that nice little revival at Riviera, but not really quite sure if that's going to be lasting or if that was just kind of a one-week wonder. And I mean, Julian Suri, who I think we all love in this room, was a last minute invite. So I think in terms of advancing out of the round robin, I like his chances. And then really from there, I think this is a tournament in a format that really rewards good iron play, and there's a few better guys at their irons than Leishman. So I'm going with Leishman's a pick, and let's be honest, Dustin Johnson's probably going to walk away with this thing anyway, yeah. because if he does anything like he did last year, it's going to be a joke.
Yep.
So that will do it for us this week. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. We'll be back next week to talk the Shell Houston Open, probably a little bit of Masters as well. So thanks again for listening. Have a good week.